Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode, and today I am rejoined by my friend Lou Feltham-Smith. Welcome, darling.
Hi. Hey, everyone.
So Lou has been, she's pretty much at the end of doing my training program, my certification. So we thought what we'd do is we would, as part of her assessment, we would evaluate a case. And it was one that actually I'd not watched because I'm not a big TV watcher either. I only watch things when people say, oh, you need to watch this. Or if I see a case, I'm like, oh, I need to find out more about that. So this was one that Lou brought to my attention, because obviously it's featured on Netflix, which is why I thought this would be a good one to talk about, because it'd be one that many of you might have watched yourself on Netflix. And it is the case between Jason Corbett and Molly Matthews, which, quite honestly, watching the documentary on Netflix, it is, you got whiplash. One minute you think it's her, next minute you think it's him. It's a very, very complex case, which is why I thought this was a really good one to discuss. It's good to highlight, to sort of demonstrate how reactive abuse can occur on the other side. Because normally we speak about, you know, women being at the receiving end of the abuse. And this case isn't like that at all, is it?
No.
No.
I just want to, before we start, Kate, it's Molly Martins. I don't know whether you heard me.
What did I say?
You said Molly Matthews.
Molly Martins.
Just in case we confuse people and they're like, who is this Molly Matthews?
And it's Molly Martins. What's the Netflix called? It's the American...
Perfect American Murder or something like
that. Yeah, something like that, yeah. Yeah, but he's Irish and she's American.
A deadly American marriage.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Molly, she definitely targeted him.
Yeah, it was, as you said, it was a real head spin because I thought I had it all figured out. Started watching it. I'm like, yes, I know where this is going. And then all of a sudden it flipped and I'm like, hang on a second. So one of the first things that I noticed is that the relationship moved really, really quickly. And that is something that we see a lot in cases of abuse, is there's the honeymoon phase and it's all very intense and, you know, in part of the study that I've done, it talks about too much too soon. So that was the thing that caught me from the start was, oh, this is moving really, really fast. She was trying to get things to move really quickly in terms of like getting engaged, getting married, having the kids adopted. She was really, really pushing to adopt the kids as her own, even though they weren't her children. So that was, yeah, I guess that was the thing that stood out the most to me, is that really fast timeline at the beginning of the relationship. And there were lots of things that she was saying which weren't true. Certain friends had reported that she'd told them one thing and then they'd found out that that wasn't entirely true, and there was just lots of things that weren't right. And I guess from the get-go you could just see, oh, there's just little niggly things that aren't quite fitting together. Yeah. And if you look at one particular one of those things, it doesn't look glaringly obvious. But when you start to see them put together in, cumulative effect of this happened and then this happened and then this happened, you're like, hang on a second, there's a pattern emerging here where there's, something's not right. And it's only when you have that curious eye and curious mind that you start delving a bit deeper and you're like, okay, we need to look further into this. And that's what I find is missing with professionals a lot of the time, is they don't have that curiosity. They just see that one incident and they're like, oh, well, that can easily be, it can easily be explained by X, Y, and Z. They're not willing to actually delve deeper and go, okay, but what if that's not the case? Is there other things that could point us towards something else going on?
I mean, it's and this is where the timeline is so important for certainly for cases like this. The timeline's the only way that you are able to like, okay, this doesn't, that's not quite adding up. Maybe we need to look a bit deeper into that. So that's why the timeline is absolutely crucial, because we need to be able to identify these little nuances of I mean, she was a fantasist. She made up stories for attention. This was something she did for a lot of her life, it would seem, because obviously with she told everybody that she was a friend of Jason's first wife, and she was going over to be their godparent, their children's godmother. And it's like a fairy tale that she ended up getting into a relationship with Jason, and that actually going to be a proper family, and none of that was true at all. She even made up having a sister that died, apparently. So she's very much a
Implies like really
fantasist.
delusional behavior that I honestly think that she ended up believing her own lies. She was just so in that made up world that whatever came out of her mouth, she believed to be true.
Oh, she obviously role played in her own mind, and that became a reality in her mind that she spoke out to other people and expected other people to believe it. But obviously she saw Jason as a easy target. He was an easy target. He definitely was targeted, 100%. Because she had that miscarriage. And in her own words, she said, "I was pining." She was pining for what she'd lost, and she saw that as a ready-made family, and he was an easy target. Because we always say about looking for the vulnerability, and on that application form that she responded to for the au pair, he said that he was a widower. So she knew straight away he was an easy target, and the children were very young. They were moldable. They were easy to coach.
And quite young as well. So, easy to it was easy for her to insert herself into their life. Whereas if she had targeted an older, like a man with older kids, they would have absolutely caught on and wouldn't have gone along with the coaching and the manipulation that was carried out.
I mean, that fear of abandonment was definitely there with the children. And she played on that. She preyed on it.
The fact that a push for them to call her mum from very early on, and she kind of moved through that process of, first she was the au pair, and then very, very quickly she was establishing herself as mum, which was quite scary to watch.
Yeah, and likely when Jason was at work, and even when she was just in the au pair role, the employer and the employee role, nobody knows whether that's what she was doing when she was on her own with the children in her employed role, telling them to call her mummy, particularly more so the younger one, the little girl, it would have been much easier to groom. And that's in a nutshell what she did. She groomed those children.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know the other thing that I saw quite early on in the piece as well is the fact that there was clearly learned behavior on her part from her father, and her father seemed to be absolutely enabling her behavior. Like I was like, oh, where she got this from? Like it was very clear from quite early on, and I can't believe that law enforcement didn't pick it up, that she had learned like no accountability, and just it was very clear that her father kind of held her on a pedestal and she could do no wrong, and he just was always there to kind of rescue her whenever something went wrong.
And it was very, very clear with with her mom, which, you know, again, if Jason was the aggressor, which is how he's been betrayed by the two of them, having she was the one that intentionally got her mom and dad over that evening. He wouldn't have, because he what they claimed he was drunk, but he wasn't drunk. He'd been she'd given he'd had some sort of medication which she's likely drugged him with the mojito that she made for him. So was he drowsy? Was he slurring his words because of what he's been given? He had been to the doctors saying that he would be moody. Was what was she doing that repeatedly? Was that not a one-off? Could that be what was behind his self-confessed moodiness that he couldn't explain, that he didn't feel comfortable with?
Yeah, that was the thing. He couldn't make sense of why he felt moody. And that really resonated with me. I was like, he is clearly confused. He doesn't know why he's feeling the way he's feeling, and there's nothing to explain why he would be feeling that way, except for that really covert, coercive control behavior that just absolutely fucks with your head.
And if she's gaslight, she's been gaslighting him, and then making out, well, you're overreacting when he's reacted, when he's reacted impulsively, verbally aggressively. She's positioning him as the problem. Is that maybe I am the problem? Maybe, well, I did respond that like that, and he's questioning his own version of reality. And if he has been drugged as well, that's going to compound that confusion around his own version of reality as well.
Yeah, and it was quite obvious that she was setting him up at certain points and recording him when he reacted, to try and get that evidence, if
Evidence.
you like, of him being abusive.
I mean, this is where you know, coercive control is never black and white, and it's like the recording. You know, victims can record perpetrators, particularly towards the tail end of it, where they are like, oh, now I'm seeing what's happening. Oh, well, you're saying that it's me. It's not me, but who's going to believe me? So victims can record, but you've got to look at why they are, why, that's why you've got to look at the whole context. That's where the timeline's so crucial. We have to evaluate the timeline in such great detail to understand why somebody's doing that. And actually, for her to record, she was looking for to record him as she's gaslighting him and getting a reaction from him so that she had that evidence. Because she
Yeah, and it
didn't,
was
she
very
wanted, because she
calculated.
wanted the she wanted, she was desperate, absolutely desperate to get to adopt the children.
And they were just a means to the end, really. It was very clear that they were just a tool that she was using to try and control him, because she knew that the only thing left that he really cared about was the kids. and that was the way to get to him. Which
Yeah.
is so, it's what they do, isn't it?
Yeah, and he did, and you know, he didn't lead her on in terms of saying about the you know, saying he would look into adoption for her, but he made it clear that if they were to get divorced, she wouldn't get custody of the children because they are his children. And when he realized that actually, most likely, the judge would rule that if they do go through with adoption, Molly would most likely get custody, and he wasn't going to have that, and that's what put the brakes on for that. But then you've got to ask the question: was she just biding her time? Was she planting seeds to position him as the aggressor in preparation for getting the adoption through, and then she'd divorce him on the grounds of domestic abuse and unreasonable behaviour? Well, we're just going to break for a short interval, and we shall see you after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. Yeah, well, with this case, it's we always say about one of the red flags is military and police background. And the reason being is because one, you can find that there can be instances where they are trained to kill, essentially. But also they're trained to interrogate, which actually Tom was, the dad was, he was actually he trained people, he trained others to interrogate, to become interrogators. And question people. So he was very, very well rehearsed on what to say, how to carry himself in challenging situations. He was able to keep it together because he's trained to do so. He also knew what the things that would make them question the evidence as well. So that's why that straight away is a red flag, and one that always needs to be taken really seriously. But like, you know, we discussed on the break, you know, it was the force that was used, wasn't it? The force was just
It was not relative to a self-defense
no.
act. It was just so over-the-top violent. You could see that there was, I can imagine it in my head, and I just can't imagine him doing anything. There was no evidence of him doing anything to warrant that kind of violence inflicted upon him. Like, it was just, it was totally not relative to the situation of what they
Yeah.
described happened.
Well, he was attacked from behind as well, wasn't he? And he was undressed.
I think they found that there was evidence that he'd actually been in the bed when she came in the room. So it's like, yeah, it just did not make sense. It nothing didn't add up.
But she knew that he was planning to, he was talking about leaving and with the children and getting a flight back to Ireland though. So I would imagine that's what's probably prompted the visit from the parents. And again, the mom, how could she not hear? How?
There was obviously a plan that was in place beforehand because she couldn't have not heard what was going on. And if you heard that kind of a commotion and your daughter's upstairs and your husband is upstairs, like, wouldn't you be calling the police? And even if you don't, you're too scared to go up there and intervene yourself, you would be calling the police in an absolute panic. You wouldn't be going back to sleep and like, oh, they'll be fine.
Well, she said she heard a scream. I heard a scream, but
Yeah.
I just went back to sleep. But
No,
you know,
that
it's
didn't happen,
no,
mate. Sorry.
you would know. But so you can definitely see there where Molly has learned from her dad. There was a bit learned behaviors that she's got from her dad, because the mum is very much a doormat. The mum knows her place. You speak when you're spoken to, and you otherwise you stay in the little you stay where you're quiet in the background and you don't question anything. And
Yeah,
that was
and
very,
mum was
very
probably
much
in a coercive, controlling relationship with Tom as well.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, she probably didn't feel as if she could step in. So, have that level of compassion somewhat for her, because I imagine that she was also a victim to him. But yeah, it definitely is enabling behavior, and it definitely paints to there being more to the story than the story that they told.
Well, if he's capable of that level of violence, that was 100% premeditated, and instigated by the two of them. What is it? She will know what he's capable of doing. So there'll be an element of fear from him as well.
Here's a question for you, Kate. Do you think that they both were involved in the actual act itself, or do you think it was the dad and Molly was like kind of part of it, but not?
This is
Because
what
I
this
don't
is
know whether
that,
she could
yeah.
inflict that much damage on someone as a woman. She wasn't a big woman. She was like quite slight. And I just wonder in my head, like, was it all Tom, and she just kind of covered for him almost? Like, he protected her and went in for her, and then she protected him by claiming part responsibility for it. I don't know.
I mean, that's not something that, because obviously they're still standing by their story, aren't they? They're not shifting on their story. And of
No.
course, the other person isn't here to tell his side of it. But I mean, could it be that Jason had gone to lie down because he was feeling woozy after she'd given him those drugs, that medication in the drink? And she's taken that as her opportunity to, I don't know, maybe he'd already had a bag packed to go back to Ireland. Maybe she's seen it and flipped and gone and attacked him. And maybe he's got up, staggered, which would explain the blood in the hallway. And then that's where Tom's come in and stepped in and finished it off.
Finish.
That's what I think's happened. That would be the most plausible explanation. I can't see the dad premeditatedly. Maybe she's got them over as a means of, well, if I can instigate a confront him about him leaving with my mum and dad there, I can stop it. because her dad was clearly her biggest enabler. There's definitely
such
a discussion
an interesting case, isn't it?
There was definitely discussion there between them prior, I think, though.
Oh yeah.
And again, they made reference to the fact that when they were on the phone to, when they'd called emergency services and they were saying to give CPR, they said that they don't think they were giving it because of the way their voice didn't change. Well, they already knew he was dead. There'd likely been a period of time gone by before they'd rung emergency services to get their story straight.
And I've given CPR, like, I know how, like, labour-intensive it is to give someone CPR. Like, yeah, they weren't puffing, they weren't out of breath, they were still able to hold the conversation. Like, yeah, there's no way that they were doing anything.
And they were both trained in it, apparently. Both Tom and Molly were trained in it. So wouldn't you, if it happened how you're saying it's happened, that you got into an argument and Molly pushed him and he fell, wouldn't you do CPR straight away? You would do it straight away. One would be doing it whilst the others, I mean, don't forget there was three adults in that house. So even if it took two of them to do the CPR, the mother, for example, could have been ringing the emergency services while they're doing that, if they were both trained in it.
And they could have been yelling down to her. If she could hear the scream, they could have been yelling down to her and saying, you need to come, we need you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they could have been sharing the CPR between them and she could have been on the phone to emergency services.
Yeah, yeah. But there was no attempts because the intention was to kill. That was the intention to kill. Like they said, it was they attacked him even once he was dead. That's how brutal it was. And obviously I talk a lot about the which obviously is covered in the training, is the primal drive. And that is less than a second. So you can't even argue you lost control for that length of time. Because it would be, now I need to get away, or I'm that scared, I need to get away. It wouldn't be you carry on attacking for that length of time.
Which makes you wonder, like, what was she so rageful over? Like, I mean, obviously she knew that he was leaving and she was trying to stop him from leaving, but, like, to know that he was already dead and she still kept going, or they still kept going, like, what on earth could be going on in their heads to...
I mean, she's definitely acted in rage because I don't want you to leave. Those are my children and you're not taking them and you've not given me what I want. So that means I have no power. If I was to leave you or you were to leave me, I have no power with the courts. Because legally, they're not my children.
And she didn't have any finances either. Like, he was supporting her financially. The house was his as well.
Yeah.
So if he left, she literally was left with nothing.
But she definitely wanted, the drive was a ready-made family. That's what she wanted. She'd miscarried and she wanted to fill that void, and she seen that as a prime opportunity, and her dad says evidently knew what was going on. He has known what's been going on 100%, and he's facilitated it. He's facilitated the fantasy.
Two very sick in the head people.
Yeah. Very, very, very disturbing. Yeah, yeah. And those poor children, you know, obviously they were coached with every inch of their life, and, you know, she preyed on, you know, they'd lost their mother, you know, and now they'd lost their father. She preyed on, you've got nobody in this world. Nobody is going to be here for it. And that's what she preyed on. You know, your life's here. You've got your friends here. You've got this here. You've got that here. And you're going to lose everything. That's you, two young children who have lost already the two most important people in their life. They were easy targets.
And as far as they were concerned, like, they just knew her as they obviously knew their biological mum. They didn't remember her very well because they were very young when she died. But as far as they were concerned, Molly was their mum. So they've effectively potentially losing two mums then and their dad. So you can absolutely see how they were coerced into taking her side because they're like, this is my mum and she's the only person I have left.
Yeah, and she's intentionally built that rapport, that bond, where she is indispensable in their life, and she's done that from the very start. So when we come back from the break, we're going to very, very briefly go over ones just to compare the difference between when a, what you know what obviously this is a woman, the woman that's the aggressor, and we're going to show where a woman is presented as the aggressor, but is in response to the perpetrator to the other person being the abuser. So we shall see you after the break.
The station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. We're just saying that Molly very, very much was in denial of what she'd done in her part in what had happened. Whereas when we look at the like cases like Sally Challen, which is a really high profile case, and Gabby Petito, which is another really high profile case. So if anybody's not watched the documentary, obviously you can catch that one on the documentary on Netflix as well. But yeah, those two were reactive responses. Certainly Gabby's an interesting one because Gabby was very, very distressed, wasn't she? At the side of the road. She was positioned as the aggressor. They completely ignored the previous call that came through where somebody had reported that they'd seen a man lashing out at a woman in the car, in a van. And obviously, yes, there were marks on Brian. Of course there were, but Gabby had retaliated and lashed out in response to what he was doing, which is only a natural response. And she was very much taking the blame, wasn't she?
It was very clear when I watched the body cam footage that she was in a state of complete dysregulation. Like you could tell instantly, oh my goodness, like this poor girl is severely traumatized by something. I just remember watching it and just going, oh my God. Like, and the fact that the police didn't pick up on the state that she was in. and delve a bit deeper and look into why she was behaving that way. Like it was not just a case of, oh, she's lashed out against him. Like she was like completely emotionally like not there.
No, definitely not.
Completely, in contrast, he was completely calm, cool, collected, like, oh, hey, cracking
Yeah.
jokes. If your partner is in that much of a distressed state and you're like, oh, hey, police officers, how are you? How's your day going? Like, does that not ring alarm bells? Because like, that would be the first thing that I would be going, hang on, red flag. Why is this guy behaving so differently to this girl? Same situation, but they're both displaying very, very opposite behaviors. Like that just, it's so obvious that there's something wrong there.
Yeah, whereas they unfortunately, because they're not trauma informed, they see the calm demeanor as, oh, well, they're the more rational. And actually, no, that's no. I mean, actually, the way Brian was, that was exactly how my ex-husband was. Every time he would rock up on my doorstep and the police would come and he would be like, hi,
And you exactly
the
rage
police.
you more as a victim because you're like, what are you doing? You've just been like pushing me, pushing me, pushing me. And now all of a sudden you are like this completely different person. That just completely enrages you as a victim even more.
Does.
And then you're seen as, oh, well, she's completely unstable. She's
Yeah.
completely crazy. Look at her. She cannot compose herself. Because you're in a complete state of trauma. It's so, once you see it, you just can't unsee it.
I suppose not. Well, if a victim's being verbally aggressive and using verbally aggressive wording and language and toward in regards to the, I don't know, even the force, the officers or the perpetrator, you kind of have to overlook that and look at and look what's below that. Why is this person so distressed? And yes, it's coming across as potentially being aggressive, which obviously Gabby wasn't in this case, but it can be a case of that where they are coming across as being verbally aggressive. But if they're very, very dysregulated, we have to ask the question, and the perpetrator's being calm, cool, and collected, you have to ask the question, why? As opposed to instantly assume that their aggression and dysregulation automatically makes them the problem, and it's not always the case. It could be that they or suddenly it's the only time that they feel safe to actually express themselves, and it could have taken them years to do that.
And you would be looking for ways to try and calm them down as well so that you can get some sense out of them. Because when they're in such a heightened state like Gabby was, like you couldn't get proper information from her because she was in such a heightened state. So, finding a way that you can actually co-regulate with the person that you're dealing with so that you can kind of bring them back down and have like a calm, rational conversation. Like trying to interview someone when they're in that state, she did not stop crying the whole time they were interviewing her. Like it was over, I think it was over 90 minutes, was it? From memory. It was a
It
long
was,
time. And she was sobbing and like in a state of dysregulation that whole time. Like, wouldn't you be looking at that going, okay, she's not calming down. Like, there's something desperately wrong here.
Nothing's coherent when a victim's in that state. So you can't make assumptions on something. And actually, they put Brian in a hotel. No, she should have been the one that was put in a hotel if they were going to put anybody in the hotel. She was evidently the most vulnerable party, even if you were just going off her emotional state. Gabby was
And from
the
a duty of care point of view, the fact that they sent her off in that state in a van by herself
Yeah.
in a place that she didn't know very well. Like, there's a really serious lack of duty of care there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was in the civil suit that her parents brought, wasn't it? Their lack of duty of care when they dealt with her at that.
Yeah, I mean, when we look and we look at the when we consider the the suicide rates linked to abuse, domestic abuse cases, that it's situations like that where they have to be aware of, well, if you've got a dysregulated victim, or and even if at that stage you have no idea who's telling the truth or who's not, if you've got somebody who's that dysregulated, your number one priority is to make sure that you safeguard them, because what you don't want is to them to that inescapability and them to be all alone, to become so intense that they end up doing something even impulsive, fleeting, one fleeting moment that they act upon and they can't reverse it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they it's these this is where the trauma-informed care is so crucial. And that's exactly why I include in the tra in my training certification is the is those that that basic cycle of regulating somebody. It's I think every single professional who works with any victims in any capacity, doesn't have to even be domestic abuse related, they need that basic skill. To regulate them, even if it's
Yeah,
just
it's mandatory.
even if it's just to you may not even get, if they're that dysregulated, you may not even get a coherent statement out of them, but it will regulate them enough to reduce their risk of the likes of suicide. It's so important.
Just linking in with something that's really relevant over here at the moment. So you would have seen on my social media that I was talking about the domestic abuse, domestic and family violence and other legislation bill that is in Parliament at the moment. And they just had a hearing last week where they brought in professionals from the domestic and family violence sector to talk about what their concerns were with police issuing immediate police protection directions for a 12-month period. So it allows them to go into a domestic violence situation and immediately issue a police directive that lasts for 12 months and is essentially offering protection to the person who's most in need of protection. And one of the things that all of the domestic violence services, including myself, highlighted was that we were concerned about the misidentification of the victim. And do you know what? Not one person in that committee hearing mentioned anything about a trauma response in a victim and highlighted the fact that a trauma response can be misidentified. So they all talked about reactive abuse and, but no one mentioned that it was actually a trauma response, which I found absolutely mind-blowing. There were like police union representatives, there were domestic violence services, there were like lots of different people in the sector, and not once was victims displaying trauma responses mentioned.
I know certainly over here there's in I mean it'll happen in many areas, but I know particularly in GMP there was two women that were done for malicious communication, because what they'll have done was, because they've not felt heard, they've been scared, and they've rocked up at the station being verbally aggressive, maybe being verbally abusive towards the officers, and they've got them done for malicious communication. Now, that's not acceptable. That is where this is where this, that's exactly it. This is where it's so important to take into consideration somebody's emotional state. We always have to, doesn't matter whether we're looking at the perpetrator or looking at the victim, We have to view all behaviours through a trauma-informed lens. I mean, even the perpetrator, for us to view their behaviour through a trauma-informed lens, and if it's available, or, take into consideration, okay, so what was their childhood like? So when we understand that, we can understand what their motive was. Were they fearful of humiliation? Were they being humiliated? Were they fearful of rejection? And that's not justifying their actions, it's giving you a motive. Because once we've got a motive, we can see a pattern to the behavior. Okay, so what behaviors have shown up every time they've been humiliated or disrespected? Or we can, once we know a motive, we can look for a pattern better. It's understanding, it's viewing that behavior through a trauma-informed lens at all times. For a victim, is this behavior out of character? Well, it is a bit out of character. Why are they behaving like this? Oh, well, they're
And it's
scared.
about asking the right questions, right? Like the DASH risk assessment and the TITRA risk assessment that you created. It's about asking the right questions and being curious and not just seeing someone's behavior, like with those ladies that turned up at the police station. Okay, this behavior is not, the way that you're behaving is not acceptable, but let's look further into why you're behaving this way. What has caused you to behave in this way? And then we can maybe see what's actually going on and what has happened before this event has occurred so that we can paint that picture of that full story and the timeline. And it's not just a you've come in here and been aggressive and verbally abusive. Like, let's step back and almost reverse engineer it to find out how we got here.
Yes, exactly that. Exactly that. And that is it in a nutshell. It is, how have we got here? And that's why the timeline is so crucial, because that gives you it acts like a mini biography of what's taken place from beginning to end. How have we got here? That's exactly it. How have we got here? Because we didn't get here overnight.
And that's a question that I've asked myself time and time again. Like, I was not responsible for what happened to me, but how did I get here? Like, what happened in the past that got me to this point where I found myself in this situation? It can be confronting sometimes for some victim survivors that you speak to when you put it in that context. But yeah, I guess I'd just reiterate, it was not your fault,
Yeah,
but
it's not that you choose. You don't. Nobody chooses to go into an abusive relationship. That's not what we're
no.
saying at all. It is a
But
case of
looking at
now.
how you got there, how
It's
did we get here, like you said.
what it's what's familiar to your nervous system. We've all heard the analogy of always going for the proverbial bad boy, and you're not interested in the good, in the nice ones. And that was a common theme in my younger days. And it was what was familiar to me. It's an uncomfortableness with somebody nice that you can't quite put your finger on, and it's like something just isn't sitting right. And that, to your nervous system, is actually danger. That's more danger than actually, oh well, this, I know what comes with this. This is familiar. And of course, the love bombing. The love bombing is like, oh yeah, it feels great. And now the abuse is coming in, and the gaslighting's coming in, and the disrespect's coming in, the devaluing's coming in. Oh, this is familiar. I don't like it. I'm reacting to it. But this is normal to me. It's
Normal for
normal.
me.
And that's comfortable to the nervous system, and to your dear little Amy, the amygdala, as Kate Truett likes to call her. But yeah, it is. It does. When you say it like that, it sounds really twisted. It's like, your brain's really twisted. But it just the emotion. It's the emotion that's more dangerous than the physical experience. And that's what we always have to remember. And this is why the digging deep and identifying the patterns is crucial. for you breaking that cycle and not repeating it again. Because you can get out of this one relationship, but unless you identify your own patterns and start to change something, you're going to keep repeating it.
Yeah, and like they say, nothing changes if nothing changes.
Yeah,
Like,
100%.
can't keep doing the same thing
Yeah.
and expecting a different result. So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's about being curious again and asking yourself those hard questions,
Yeah.
not just curiosity from professionals, but curiosity in your own healing as well.
But we're definitely not saying anybody's to blame for it. Absolutely not. You know, none of us are to blame for finding ourselves in this situation. We just didn't know any better. Well, thank you for joining me, honey. It's been wonderful. And we shall see you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specialising in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.